children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country.
That's California Senator Dianne Feinstein speaking during last week's hearing for Amy Coney Barrett, a nominee to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. It's not a big hearing, but they were concerned about the dogma that apparently lives loud within her. Sound a little bit like something from Star Wars. And what is the big issues that many have fought for many years for? What big issues? It was very vague, wasn't it? Well, I think we can all decipher the code. The dogma is this woman's devout religious beliefs, namely Catholic beliefs, and the big issues, actually the big issue for Dianne Feinstein is the only issue for Dianne Feinstein, and that's abortion. And I think it's her way of saying, you're a Catholic that actually believes what Catholics ought to believe, and so that's a concern to me when confirming you for this Court of Appeals position. Looks like a religious test to me. How has the media covered this, though? You've seen it in social media, but have you read about it anyplace in the mainstream media, so-called? Joining us to talk about media coverage of religious concerns raised by Democratic senators of a federal appeals court nominee, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with the news outlet that if it writes about it, everybody writes about it or talks about it, the Associated Press. How did the Associated Press fail to notice this interchange among the others that took place, Dick Durbin and a few others, Al Franken, all talking to these two court nominees about their faith?
There was a very interesting kind of a diagram that circulated recently online and on Twitter. One of those Venn things where you have like heat maps, you know, of what stirs up conversation. And this was a chart showing conservative Twitter sources and liberal Twitter sources. And what was interesting about it is that they were tracing retweets and favorite clicks, you know, the little heart-shaped click. And what they found was that there was hardly any connection on Twitter between the world of liberal online Twitter and conservative online Twitter. These were two different universes that were not listening to each other. So I have to speculate here a little bit, but I think it's safe to say that the AP did not staff this particular hearing. You have a range of people. They're nominated for the appeals court. I don't think that's a meeting, that's a session that the Associated Press would automatically staff. It's possible, but you know that it would be staffed by the publications in Washington that focus on politics exclusively. So the way this would normally function for the AP is they would sit back and watch to see if other publications covered it. It's not the sort of thing like a tornado hitting the city or a previously announced Supreme Court decision to where something immediately happens and you know it's breaking news. In this case, breaking news would be defined by the reactions of the people covering the event and the reactions of people attending the event. So this puts us in a kind of an interesting situation. You're not going to know that something wild happened in that hearing until you hear about it through other channels. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's going to be on a blog at the Washington Post, or there's going to be this boom. There's going to be this explosion on Twitter. Well, back to the Venn graph. There was an explosion on Twitter related to this event, but it was an explosion in conservative media. Thus, if that chart showing who listens to who on Twitter and in social media is correct, how many mainstream journalists would have seen the explosion on Twitter among alternative, conservative, and religious media sources?
So sort that out. What does that tell you?
Well, they very few would have seen it, right? I mean, because they don't, the tweets and the retweets don't cross. The kind of more progressive social sources and experts and insiders and think tanks that would dominate Washington mainstream thought on issues of law, sexuality, religion, etc., they didn't react to the Feinstein quote because to them it seemed normal. In fact, if you go onto YouTube and look at liberal sites, everybody there is congratulating the Democratic senator for destroying, that's the hot word right now in social media, for destroying this nominee. And you can read, and then possibility that this might constitute a religious test is just dismissed. The discussion, was this a violation of the U.S. Constitution's ban on a religious test for public service and public office? That conversation occurred almost completely in a social media universe that didn't draw the attention of the very people that would signal mainstream newsrooms that something important happened. Thus, there was no story because it didn't attract the interest of the right people and it didn't have the right angle. Now, in my very first piece, I've now written three pieces for Get Religion on this. In my very first piece, I asked the simple question, what would have happened if senators had challenged a Muslim candidate for public office or public service on a similar point? What if someone had said, you know, the Quran lives too loudly within you, and I don't think that we can really consider you, or that raises really, really troublesome situations? Or what if someone had on an issue, maybe you had an Orthodox Jewish candidate for public office, and someone said, well, you know, the Talmud lives. I'm not sure the New York Times has written a hard news story about that hearing yet. And then immediately you had people start responding with opinion pieces about what happened. But at that point, you've never had the basic foundation of reporting where you called up people on both sides of this issue and said, why do you think this was important? Or why do you think this was not important? Why do you think this was totally legally inappropriate? Why do you think it was appropriate? You didn't have that initial story that laid a basic foundation of facts. And we depend on the Associated Press to be kind of the first domino that falls in the news cycle to alert other people. In other words, the Associated Press puts out a wire service, somebody else covers that, or the Washington Post puts out a story, everybody then goes, oh, look, the Washington Post, that was important. Then the dominoes start falling. And the next thing you know, it's on National Public Radio. It might even, although if it's a religious topic, it probably won't, it might even make it to CNN or one of the major networks. And gosh, if it's important enough, and it's really a part of American public discourse, it's crucial to understanding American life, it might even make it into the night talk show comic routines.
It did make it to The Atlantic.
And that's a really interesting thing. I devoted a whole post to that because The Atlantic has a very, very up-and-coming religion writer named Emma Green, who lately has started playing an interesting role in the news cycle in and of herself. Something will happen. It won't get commented on in the mainstream press. I get the impression that Emma Green is one of those few people chasing the Venn signals that go from the blue to the red and the red to the blue and back and forth. I get the impression that she follows maybe some leading anti-Trump conservatives, cultural conservatives, and then she follows up frequently. She also follows liberal evangelicals and things that they write about. You remember the Eugene Peterson story. I believe it was an Atlantic piece that kind of took the Eugene Peterson on LGBT issues, and boom, all of a sudden, if it's in the Atlantic, it's validated. It's now news. But it's interesting because even though her pieces contain a tremendous amount of sourcing and interesting materials and valid material to read, the Atlantic Monthly is still an interpretive, left-of-center, mainstream Washington analysis magazine. And that's totally valid. I want everybody to hear me say that's totally valid. But it's kind of interesting when that frames the story a certain way that sets the tone then for the coverage. You end up then with hard news coverage reacting to what was an analysis reaction story to previous coverage that didn't exist. That's a kind of a Zen thing right there. But does that make sense? The dominoes fall all out of sequence. Instead of hard news, second day hard news, reaction analysis, you know, your normal pattern in the media. Now you've got silence, explosion in Twitter, more explosions in Twitter, then maybe The Atlantic writes an analysis piece about all the explosions in Twitter and the issue itself. And then the hard news people go, well, maybe we should write a story about that, which is why it was fascinating that when the Associated Press finally wrote about that hearing, it didn't write about the hearing. It wrote about Roman Catholic bishops being angry about the hearing. In other words, this subject isn't really news. But dang it, those conservatives are so mad again. And these are conservatives who matter. They're Roman Catholic bishops and archbishops and people at Notre Dame. Okay, maybe we ought to put a story out about it. That's a weird sequence for the news.
It's not as though this is, I mean, while it is simply, what, an appeals court judicial nomination hearing and those kind of things, there are a lot of court nomination hearings that the Senate has to run through. But the fact that three separate senators raised the issue of faith on two nominees, explicitly Dick Durbin even had a little kind of Q&A with one of the nominees about what a Orthodox Catholic means, and I thought immediately of you because that's one of your pet peeves, is kind of the unmodified term Catholic.
And well, the devout Catholic is the key. That's the big label. Orthodox, at least, is a doctrinal term. In other words, if you say someone is an Orthodox Catholic, you're at least implying that they take an Orthodox position on dogma. On the term I use that makes people mad all the time at Get Religion, I call these people a pro-catechism Catholic. That would be another way of saying it. In other words, they actually affirm the details, as opposed to devout Catholic. I have no idea, you know, what in the world that means. Does that mean they kneel a certain number of times a month? I mean, how do you, in terms of journalism factual content, how do you quantify that? So that's the term that always drives me crazy, is devout.
The question that everyone was raising, at least everyone in the properly colored Venn diagram of social media, was this not only sounds like a religious test, this probably is an implementation of some kind of religious test explicitly forbidden by the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, and what was really interesting about this case was that this woman, back in her law school career when she was a student, I mean, she's now a Notre Dame law professor. Back when she was a student in law school, she co-wrote an essay with one of her professors. And it's interesting to note that Garvey, President Garvey, is now the president of the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. They co-wrote this article in which they said that when faced with a clear collision between a person's dogmatic religious views and the established law of the land, jurists should either, A, they should not stretch, and the word cheat, to somehow find a way to twist the existing law to their own prejudices. They shouldn't do that. But if they got to a situation where they simply could not reconcile their own beliefs from the case before them, they should recuse themselves and say, I'm not the person who should make this decision because my own personal convictions are too strong. Now, what's fascinating is that this article came up in the hearing. Now, you would think these people would be saying, well, I see you've addressed this. Are these still your views today? Would you behave in this manner, serving on an appeals court? Thank you for writing this article. Instead, what basically happened was the three senators who were grilling her immediately assumed either A, they interpreted the article as saying exactly the opposite of what it clearly said. Now, that happened to be the position that was being taken by the groups that were lobbying against Barrett, against the nominee, Amy Barrett of Notre Dame. So the senators just happened to take the exact interpretation of the article offered by those who opposed her nomination. Or they would actually read it, you know, here's what she said, or they would refer to it, here's what she said, and then they would basically say, we don't believe you. We don't believe that on the word nobody wanted to say, but everybody knew it was the issue. We don't believe that on abortion you would do that. We don't believe you would honor precedent, or you would recuse themselves. Or then you had people say, well, look, if this is the kind of person who has to recuse themselves, then maybe they're not the kind of person that should even be allowed in the court in the first place. Which sounds an awful lot like, if you flash back a year or so, to the Kim Davis stuff in Kentucky, that the county official who was supposed to sign the same-sex marriage certificates and was required by law to do so. And she asked the state to just take that line off the certificate so that anybody could sign it of a certain level of official status in the state. And in effect, she was saying, I would like to recuse myself from this because I'm not the person who can sign this document with a clear conscience. So I'm claiming a conflict of interest, but I'm not attempting to stop these two people from getting married. I'm simply saying, I recuse myself. I have a conflict of interest. Let someone else sign this document. So once again, we have this standard. If you can't go along with every aspect of what our current legal standard is, you are not allowed in public life at all, which is fascinating because during the previous administration, we had numerous cases where the Justice Department declined to file briefs backing, like, say, you know, the previous legislation in Congress on marriage, or LGBT rights or trans rights or other things. You had the Justice Department as simply saying, well, we don't back that, but the court can just make up its own mind. There's a lot of different people in public life who believe a lot of different things. Is it time to start kicking people out of public life and public service simply because of crucial clashes between their religious faith and the current state of law, especially if these people like Barrett have clearly said, I know it's the law of the land, I have to interpret within the law of the land, or if I can't do that, I would back off and let someone else make the decision. It's a very interesting stage we're at right now, and it does very much sound like a religious test is being enforced. And I honestly wonder whether it would be enforced against Muslims, who most of whom would have very similar social beliefs, Orthodox Jews, or members of other traditional religious faiths.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religious concerns raised by a few Democratic senators of a federal appeals court nominee. More with him on the other side of the break. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us for our series, Christ in the Old Testament, will be in Psalm 103. Bless the Lord, O my soul. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at LutheranFCU.org.
The Law Assumed Sermon, the Gospel Afterthought Sermon, the God Loves You Anyway Sermon. I've written an article in the latest Issues, Etc. journal titled An Updated Listener's Guide to the Pulpit. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Matt Richard details his journey from folk Lutheranism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues, Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religious concerns that were raised by certain senators, Democratic senators, of a federal appeals court nominee. Terry, I guess even if it isn't a religious test, and I think it is, but even if it isn't, to raise the subject of one's religious faith in the context of evaluating a nominee's qualifications to be confirmed to any court or any federal position, even if it isn't a religious test, this is the kind of thing that can come back and bite you in the back end next time. Let's say there's a senator on the other side who's of a mind to question the convictions and the beliefs of a Muslim nominee. He could say, well, look, last time you guys were questioning these Roman Catholic nominees, it's fair is fair. What are your thoughts?
It's really interesting. Of course, I don't think the press would treat that in the same way, which means you wouldn't have the groundswell of the mainstream press. There's a saying in Washington, you know, we don't know what to, how to vote until it's on NPR. I mean, NPR is kind of like the moral conscience of the city of Washington for everybody. But I'd like to remind listeners of something that happened before. You remember the Bernie Sanders case?
Absolutely.
With the man who was nominated to a position in economics. In that case, Bernie Sanders was pushing him on something that had never come up in his public life. He had never been accused of prejudicial action against Muslims. And in asking a question about his views on salvation, in what sense is the question of who goes to heaven and who doesn't, at what sense is that an issue that is up to the U.S. Congress or to the U.S. courts? I mean, that was an even more bizarre case. At least in this case, we were discussing a woman with a track record of legal documentation where you have a chance to cover it, quote what she said, what she believes, and then you could cover it. How in the world do you justify the kind of questions that Bernie Sanders asked about an issue that is not subject to the courts of this life and this earth? I mean, literally, Bernie is saying, I think you've heard God wrong. Now, there's an issue to be settled at a Senate hearing, right?
I can't even imagine it.
Yeah, I can't imagine it under other circumstances. There's one other thing I'd like to point out here, which goes back to the Venn Grahams back at the beginning of our conversation. Another thing that happened the same day in the same news cycle, you had, you know, the Mr. Breitbart. Is that the name of the website? The conservative website? Anyway, Bannon. We had him, you know, he's out of the White House now. He's speaking his mind. And in a 60-minute interview, he lashed out at the U.S. Catholic bishops on the issue of immigration and the Dreamers and stuff like that, and basically said, well, you know, those Catholic bishops, the only reason they're backing Latinos and immigrants is because their church is shrinking and they need to fill up their pews. Well, you can imagine the explosion on Twitter when that happened. Even though that was not like a real event that affected anything, this man isn't even in the government anymore. He's connected in the past with Trump, but there was no legal consequences to his words at all. That story exploded into the journalism mainstream and got instant coverage. I mean, everybody covered it. You do a general search for that online and you get hit after hit after hit in mainstream publications and on all of the major television networks. That happened the same day, same news cycle, I should say, as the Barrett loud dogma quote. It's very interesting to compare those two things and say, why? Look at what the press thinks is important, and look what the press thinks isn't important when it comes to attacking Catholics. Bannon attacks the bishops, and boy, is that huge news. Actual senators in a hearing on a that can determine a woman's future service in the U.S. legal system? Nah, not so much. That's not really news. I think that says a lot about where we are right now in social media and the types of issues we think matter the most.
Did you find any news stories, and not opinion columns or social media buzz, that actually mentioned Article 6, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution, no religious test, and I'll quote it, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States.
Now, that started happening in the analysis pieces. So, obviously, it was a matter of opinion among conservatives that was relevant to this case. That wasn't something that journalists believed could be stated as clear fact. You know, that religion stuff, it's all about opinion, even when it's in the U.S. Constitution. like that whole free exercise of religion thing.
Is this part of the problem here, to relegate all of this to opinion, that if religion is viewed only as opinion, not necessarily even as conviction, or much less as transcendent truth, kind of in the age of extreme subjectivity in which we live, that someone might say, I'm not imposing a religious test. I just think this person's opinions are repugnant. The religion is whatever it is, and that's private in their own mind, but their opinions formed by that religion are repugnant and disqualify them.
Well, you could say that their political views formed by that are repugnant. And I think that's actually kind of where we are right now as a nation. Certain views are viewed as crazy. They're viewed as irrational. They're viewed as cruel. You're in a lot of our debates on our college campuses, you're hearing people say that these, even speaking these kinds of views, makes me feel unsafe, makes me feel traumatized. It's an attack on my dignity to allow these kinds of words to be spoken. Now, normally, up until about the last 5 or 6 years, maybe a decade, liberals, classic liberals, would simply say, I'm sorry, we live in a culture where we have freedom of speech, we have freedom of conscience, and you don't have a right to not be offended. You people have a right to express their views. Maybe if they keep saying them over and over and over, we can call this a public nuisance or something like that, but you don't have a right to not be offended. Where we are right now, I think one of the most important issues in the next decade or so, and it's closely linked to the issue of religious liberty suddenly being in scare quotes, and people talking about freedom of worship, you know, that stuff you do inside the locked doors of a church, freedom of worship instead of the free exercise of religion. I think we're heading into a decade where we're going to be hearing a lot about the degree to which Americans now disagree with free speech as a concept in American political life. And as someone who considers himself to be a radical First Amendment liberal in the old sense of the word, I frankly find that terrifying.
I have two more questions for you. I think these things qualify as religious tests, but I think they also qualify as something else, and that is kind of a nascent anti-Catholicism. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's traditional forms of religion in general. I think Catholicism makes headlines and stuff like that. I mean, but the Bernie Sanders attack was on the views of an evangelical Christian. I think what we have here is a bias against beliefs in religious certainty. We're back to James Davison Hunter and his classic book in the early 90s, Culture Wars, The Struggle to Define America, where he divided America into two camps, the camp of the progressives and the camp of the Orthodox. And the Orthodox were people who believed that there is such a thing as a transcendent, revealed truth, and that it was okay to live your life based on that assumption. The camp of the progressives sees truth as something that is evolving, ever-changing, and based on personal feelings and experiences. And he noted way back, I mean, that's now coming, you know, 25 years ago, he noted that this was now the major division in American life. So I think what you saw on that Senate panel the other day was a clash between people who would say, well, there's good religion and there's bad religion. And the good religion is very flexible, it's emotional, it changes, and nobody claims they know all the answers except the people that know with absolute certainty that there are no answers. We're back to that conundrum. But these Orthodox people who believe that there is a revealed truth about the human person, there is, in the words of St. John Paul II, we're coming up on the major anniversary of this, veritas splendor, there is the splendor of truth. There is the belief that we have revealed truth from God. Now, Muslims, Jews, evangelicals, Catholics, Eastern Orthodox, etc., they may not agree on what these truths are. But Hunter said we're in a time already, 1990 or so when he wrote this, that it's already controversial to even claim that such a truth exists and that people should be allowed to act on them in public life. I think what we're seeing is another expression of Hunter's great divide in American life between relativists, people with evolving experiential concepts of truth, and people who have, might we even say, dogmatic concepts of truth.
Then with only 30 seconds here, why not the ardent believer in the objective truth of Islam or the ardent believer in the objective and exclusive truth of Orthodox Judaism? Why the Christians?
Well, I think Judaism raises the issue of anti-Semitism. And with Islam, you're dealing with a group that in the American context is a mainstream and liberal approved victim group in terms of how we view our culture. Evangelicals and Catholics are not victims. They're bullies. That's the difference.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
While we're on the subject of media coverage of religion, Mark and Molly Hemingway, Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard, Molly Hemingway of Fox News, will be making the case for Christians engaging the news media at the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 10th. And Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Don't wait to register because attendance is limited to 400 attendees. You can find out more and register by calling 618-223-8385 or register online at issuesetc.org. It's the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. When we come back, it's our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will take us into Psalm 103, some familiar territory to search out Christ. Bless the Lord, O my soul. We'll be right back with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. AdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at AdGruesome.com. That's AdGruesome.com.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan in Rochester Hills. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's LCIW.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at LCIW.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm delighted to be chairman of Preach the Word Project, a project of our Synod to strengthen the preaching of all of us pastors in the Synod. We know how eternally important that is.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Fekencher talking about the new Preach the Word Project.
So we've put together a program of 12 modules that will be coming out this year and over the next 3 years on a variety of preaching topics for pastors to do together with two other pastors, two guys they trust, two guys they feel comfortable with, written materials and very fine video quality materials that are now becoming available.
Preach the Word helps pastors work together to improve their preaching with several resources and by interacting with seminary professors and fellow preachers. Find out more at lcms.org/preachtheword. lcms.org/preachtheword. Preaching is challenging business. We all can use some fresh ideas. lcms.org/preachtheword.